Refugees may want to come back home, but landmines, rebel troops, and most of all, the proliferation of light weapons are today urgent problems that need solutions. In Senegal, this is Njaga Seck for Free Speech Radio News.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
Hello, this is Henry Rollins, and you're listening to WUSB SUNY Stony Brook 90.1 FM. This is Henry Rollins, and you're listening to WUSB SUNY Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
And a very good evening to you here at SUNY Stony Brook. This is Off the Wall at 1 minute after 6 o'clock. That's not a little noisy to you? This is a little, like there's a little too much going on. I don't mean in the world, I mean here in the studio. It sounds like there's a bit too much happening. I don't know, it's hard to put my finger on it, but yeah, it's kind of a confusion of sounds. That kind of thing. It must all be in my head. Don't mind me. Don't mind me. I'm just the voice coming out of these speakers. excuse me. I'm a victim of this this whole weather shenanigans going on, where it's snowing one day and 80 degrees the next, and you never know what to believe. But I do want to say one thing. I want to say this with all the sincerity that I can muster, that we did quite well during the Radiothon, and I want to thank everybody who called in to show their support. It really makes a big difference. And we raised just about $2,000 on this program alone, and we did that in what really was 3 hours, 3 hours of programming.
Hello, this is Henry Rollins, and you're listening to WUSB SUNY Stony Brook 90.1.
Thank you, Henry. Get out of here already. All right. But what I wanted to say was...
it's a very good evening to you here at SUNY Stony Brook.
Wait a minute.
This is Off the Wall.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I'm getting all confused.
At 1 minute after 6 o'clock.
What's the noise of you?
This is a little, like there's a little too much going on.
Yeah, there's a bit too much going on. Get out of here.
I don't mean in the world. I mean here in the studio.
Yeah, here in the studio.
It's like, there's a bit too much happening.
I don't have any control with my finger on it, but hang on.
Hello, this is Henry Rollins, and you're listening to WUSB SUNY Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
Don't mind me. All right. I'm not gonna mind anyone here. Get Henry Rollins out of here. All right, good. Wherever Henry Rollins goes, trouble soon follows. Sorry, man. Yeah, what was I saying? Fundraising, yes. We raised about $2,000 here on this program, which really was done in 3 hours, since you can't count April 1st. Because I understand it cost several people to drive off the road during that program, and it's amazing people didn't retract their pledges during that particular show. So apologies for that, and much gratitude to the people who did call in and show their support. I think it just goes to show something that, basically flies in the face of what a lot of people say, especially in non-commercial radio and college stations, that people just want to hear music. Well, that might be so for some people, and that might be so for some times of the day, but talk radio is also something that I think is very important, especially these days, when you can only get one perspective on the radio for the most part. I'm talking AM radio mostly. I mean, most of us aren't blessed with having Pacifica stations near us and other stations that allow different points of view. For most of you, it's Rush Limbaugh and all those other hate mongers that are on the AM dial. Those are the people that you're stuck with. WUSB offers you something different, and it's good to see people respond to that. Let's hope that we see more programs pop up. For those of you listening on the Internet, and I know there are a lot of you, in fact, I'd say that's the bulk of our contributing audiences on the Internet, and I want to thank them very much because they made it all possible. Listen to some other shows on this station. Listen around the clock. See what else you like. The schedule is available on WUSB.fm. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, especially if you come from one of those areas that doesn't have another voice, another point of view. And feel free to send us your feedback as well. Website www.wusb.fm. I'm told you don't even need the www. How do you like that? Show their support. I think it's just... It's going to be one of those days. Well, okay. So, war. Yeah, the war. Oh, boy. What a week. What a week. Well, we didn't see the statues toppling last week. That happened, I think, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning for us. Boy, there was all kinds of pandemonium, and it seemed like everything was going so great. I mean, you know, people basically, praising the United States no end over there in Iraq, and people greeting the soldiers, and it was, you know, it was uplifting. It was something that I think, you know, Americans needed. They needed that shot in the arm. Yeah, you know, we're doing the right thing. This is this feels good. The world is welcoming us. And on the other program, I asked the question, how long you think this honeymoon is going to last? Even I thought it would last longer than this, but it lasted barely a day after all the jubilation. The celebrating and the singing and the dancing in the streets quickly turned into rioting and looting and pillaging. And now, less than a week later, the blame is being laid squarely on the shoulders of the United States for not planning it out, for not being there to stop the catastrophes from happening, and now even for remaining a presence, which a lot of people are resenting. I guess, you know, you can say it was predictable. I just thought it would take a little longer than that, but no, things are moving very quickly over there. But the things that really bother me so much is the fact that, you know, we went in there and apparently we had no plan to, you know, to keep this from happening, to keep the entire city from burning. No, that's not our job. Our job is just to, you know, to bomb. And once we bomb the city into submission, then we stand around and accept the gratitude of the civilians and watch as they destroy their civilization. Doesn't seem to be much of a policy, but apparently that's what the policy was. Here's a story from the net. The jubilation, looting, and lawlessness that has filled the vacuum caused by the collapse of the Saddam Hussein government looks like an early indication of what lies ahead for Iraq. If sections of people in the capital of Baghdad and the southern city of Basra indulged in looting, there were others who tried to physically attack those who were loyal to the administration of Saddam Hussein. In Basra, where control was proclaimed earlier in the week, a contingent came upon a mob in the process of stoning a man to death. They stopped throwing stones when they saw us, according to a soldier, but some of them still had stones in their hands. One had a broken bottle. They were beating him with sticks, punching him. They shouted, "He broke into our friend's shop." He was rescued in time. The looting of banks, hotels, and other official or semi-official buildings is going on unabated, while residents have resorted to vigilante justice against looters who target private houses or shops. And one estimate says there may have been about a dozen lynchings of thieves in Basra since its capture. British forces concede they would interfere to save a life, but could do little to stop the looting. You get to the Sheraton, and there are 300 to 500 people. They took everything, one soldier said. The hotel was ransacked. The invading troops had been instructed to win over local people. At the same time, they had to maintain a semblance of law, and as it turns out, they just watched as people let out their scheme by taking the opportunity to loot and, where possible, wreaking vengeance on loyalists of the previous government. The sense of confusion over the next stage in the battle seems to permeate from the top down. British troops say they have picked an unnamed sheikh to be a future leader for the province, under whose direction and orders is not clear, but reports from Basra say they are a long way from reestablishing a police force that disappeared along with the rest of Basra's civil administration after the U.S.-led forces invaded Iraq. A decision has been taken only on what needs to be done immediately, the setting up of the Office for Reconstruction and Humanitarian Assistance. The White House has indicated this will be led by a retired military official, Lieutenant General Jay Garner. Now, of course, you know, the United Nations has means of doing things like this, but apparently we're going to form some sort of new organization now and put this guy, Lieutenant General Jay Garner, in charge. He's going to be in charge. Retired military official. Several hundred bureaucrats, contractors, and humanitarian workers would arrive in Iraq as part of the ORHA to ensure running of essential utilities, including the bare functioning of the government, and ensuring food, water, and electricity for the people. And also, that article, by the way, came from the English version of Al Jazeera. See how incredibly biased they are. This comes from another site concerning the ransacking of Baghdad's museum. Looters have sacked Baghdad's antiquities museum, plundering treasures dating back thousands of years to the dawn of civilization in Mesopotamia. They blamed U.S. troops, the museum staff that is, blamed U.S. troops for not protecting the treasures. Just to get one guy out of the country. We're literally destroying Western civilization. I mean, present and past and definitely future. The past is a new twist, though. I'll give them that, you know. I thought the future was doomed. I thought the present was pretty messed up, but wow, we can even destroy the past. Surveying the littered glass wreckage of display cases and pottery shards at the Iraqi National Museum on Saturday, Deputy Director Nabhal Amin wept and told Reuters they have looted or destroyed 170,000 items of antiquity dating back thousands of years. They were worth billions of dollars. She blamed U.S. troops, who have controlled Baghdad since the collapse of President Saddam Hussein's rule last Wednesday, for failing to heed appeals from museum staff to protect it from looters who moved into the building on Friday. Think about it. Think about it. Our troops took over a country. You know, they went in there with airplanes and tanks and all kinds of things, and they were able to take down an entire nation. And in a day or two, they were able to move into the capital. So are you telling me it's impossible to surround a building and keep people from getting into it? A building filled with the most historic of treasures known to mankind? No, that's not our job. That's not our job. We're going to just sit around somewhere else. This could have been prevented so easily. So easily this could have been prevented. That's what pisses me off here. The looters broke into rooms that were built like bank vaults with huge steel doors. The museum grounds were full of smashed doors, windows, and littered with office paperwork and books. We know people are hungry, but what are they going to do with these antiquities? As soon as I saw the American troops near the museum, I asked them to protect it, but the second day, looters came and robbed or destroyed all the antiquities. Some of the museum's artifacts had been moved into storage to avoid a repeat of damage to other antiquities during the 1991 Gulf War. And that houses items from ancient Babylon and Nineveh, Sumerian statues, Assyrian reliefs, and 5,000-year-old tablets bearing some of the earliest known writing. There are also gold and silver helmets and cups from the Ur Cemetery. I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's a two-letter word. The museum was only open to the public in April 2000 after shutting down at the beginning of the 1991 Gulf War. It survived airstrikes on Baghdad in 1991. And again, was almost unscathed by attacks in the capital by U.S.-led forces. That is some tragedy that could have been so easily prevented. And who knows how much more is going to happen. The future. Yeah, we still got the future to worry about. That's going to be crazy. Now, the latest I'm hearing is that we're starting to threaten Syria now. I mean, starting to do it publicly. We've been threatening Syria for quite some time, but now it's a question of who's going to be next, because this was too easy. You know, we've got all those people over there. You know, we've got to do something more. So it seems like Syria is the logical choice. We've been saying, and again, you know, the disclaimer for I got to say, you know, something to represent our government. And unfortunately, since it is our government, it is we. And for those of you who paid taxes today, you're paying for this too, so it's you. Yeah, I paid taxes as well, I know. It's impossible to get out of, but this is something that affects every single person who's part of this country. And until we change it, this we is the we that we have. Think about it. I don't know what the percentage is. Maybe somebody can come up with an exact figure. Is it 50%, 60% of our taxes go to pay for garbage like this? And all the money that doesn't go to schools, that doesn't go to education and, you know, paving roads and keeping people fed and things like that. Nah, this is more important. Getting one guy out of a country. And, you know, he's out of the country now. Or, you know, he's not alive, or he's completely powerless. What was the deal we came up with at the beginning? That if you leave the country, we won't bomb you? Just leave. Go away. Get out of here. And now we're warning Syria, if he's in your country, you're in big trouble. I mean, come on. Which is it? Do we want him out of there? Or do we not want him out of there? He's out of there now. So what's... I don't understand this. This is a crazy conversation. Syrian Foreign Minister Farouk al-Shara on Saturday denied U.S. allegations that Syria is hiding deposed Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction and sheltering leaders of Saddam's fallen regime. At a news briefing with French Foreign Minister Dominique de Villepin, Shara said U.S. complaints against Syria came from fanatic circles in the Bush administration who want to degrade Syria's role in the region. Sometimes, Shara said, I don't think the Americans know what they want. They accuse us of hiding Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, but they don't listen when we tell them we don't have any. We have no weapons, and we harbor no one, and they bring us no evidence. Well, there you go. That's the theme right there. No evidence. Accusations, no evidence. That's a staple of the Bush administration. Because we say so. Remember the reason this all started? Well, one of the reasons, the main reason, weapons of mass destruction. Where are they? Where are these weapons of mass destruction? Every day I hear, oh, we found something. Last week we found chemicals. CNN had it on their front page. Chemicals found. But they turned out to be pesticides. Yeah, pesticides. And you didn't see the big headline saying that. The story just kind of evaporated. Went away. And another story that evaporated and went away had to do with a little a rally that took place last week over by Ground Zero. It's interesting because I tried searching for this story afterwards because I read something in it. It was just so incredibly stupid. I wanted to get it again. And I searched CNN's site for it, and even though I had the keywords, it just doesn't exist anymore. But fortunately, I thought my printer was broken, but it wasn't. It spat out this this page before it died, and I have the story after all. Dateline Friday, April 11th. Thousands of labor union workers crowded along the western edge of Ground Zero Thursday to show their support for U.S. troops in the war against Iraq. Police said 25,000 people, including electrical workers, carpenters, iron workers, firefighters, and police officers, attended the gathering. It's interesting that police gave the estimate of 25,000 when the organizers gave the estimate of 15,000. I mean, police always underestimate the crowds. That's standard practice. But this time they overestimated. That was funny in itself. Some of the people in the crowd carried photographs of friends and relatives killed in the World Trade Center attacks, which is really kind of creepy, if you ask me. I'd say the same thing for people on the Peace March carrying, you know, pictures of people, using them to promote their cause. Speak for yourself, you know, not for those who can't speak for themselves anymore. Others wore yellow ribbons and chanted USA, USA. New York Governor George Pataki praised the U.S. troops in Iraq. Some of you may have seen yesterday in Baghdad a picture of a statue of that evil dictator being toppled and dragged through the streets by Iraqis, Pataki said to the cheering crowd. And here's the quote that got deleted. I couldn't find anywhere until I found this piece of paper. Let's melt it down. Let's bring it to New York, and let's put it in one of the girders that's going to rise over here as a symbol of the rebuilding of New York and the rebuilding of America. What a jackass. I swear, what a jackass this guy is. Let's melt down the statue of Saddam Hussein and make it part of the New World Trade Center. What a bonehead. I mean, for one thing, there is absolutely no evidence linking anything going on in Iraq to what happened at the World Trade Center. Why are these two things being tied together? And to take a statue like that and use it in that way, I mean, it's offensive on so many levels. I can't even begin. But just to basically rewrite history and make it in the minds of people that you're speaking to that we got the people responsible for this, when there are probably people I know who have stronger ties to Al-Qaeda than Saddam Hussein. It's absolutely insane. Not just me, everybody. Everybody would have better ties to Al-Qaeda than Saddam Hussein. I mean, don't you think if there was evidence to put forward that it would have been put forward by now, it would have been the smoking gun, you know, some kind of a clandestine meeting or, you know, paperwork going between the two. The only things that our country has produced are forged documents, badly forged documents, that basically accuse Iraq of trying to buy uranium, I think it was, without even an Al-Qaeda link. That didn't even have an Al-Qaeda link. So the whole thing is just really silly. Well, here's the logic. Here's the logic you get when you ask these questions. Construction worker William Sexer's son, Jason, died on September 11th. He attended the rally because he believes the terrorist attack is connected to the war in Iraq. Fine. You can believe that. You can believe whatever you want. But he asks, what do you want as proof? Do you want Saddam Hussein shaking hands with Osama bin Laden? Well, yeah, that would be good. That would be a start. Or anything. Anything, please, just something. Just because they're in the Mideast doesn't mean they all know each other. I really think that's the mentality driving all of this. Yeah, well, and Bob Dole was there, too. He came up with a great string of words strung together here. Now we have liberated the people of Iraq from the strutting psychopath. The statues are coming down. No more torture chambers. No more acid baths. I'd call Saddam a gangster's regime. I'd call Saddam's regime a gangster's regime, but that would be an insult to gangsters. Clever. But there are so many regimes that are uncool. That torture people, that intimidate people, that don't give people their fair shake. And no, I'm not saying this regime here is one of those. We have a lot of things that most people don't have, but we need to start asking some serious questions here as to what we're doing to the rest of the world. Is it now our plan to go into every country that has a dictator? Every country that doesn't feed its people enough? Every country that tortures dissenters? Because that's most of the world. I got news for you. Most of the world. Unbelievable. So now we have somebody else that we can't find that's the enemy of the people. This story comes from the Gulf News. In case you wonder who the Gulf News is, they're the leading English language newspaper of the United Arab Emirates. And They've been around since 1978. An Iranian news agency close to top conservative military figures attributed the fall of Baghdad to a secret agreement between Saddam Hussein, Russia, and the United States. According to the Baztab agency, 13 days after the start of the war, Saddam and Russian intelligence allegedly pledged to hand over Baghdad with minimal resistance to Allied forces provided they spared the lives of Saddam and 100 of his close relatives. The U.S., for its part, promised to safely send Saddam and his entourage to a third country. Baztab added that Mohammed Saeed al-Saif, Iraqi information minister, was instructed to stay in Baghdad until the very last moments to lend the impression that everything in Saddam's camp was under control, or actually just to provide a comedy show. Man, that, you see this guy on TV? You have to be up at like 3 in the morning to see him, but yes, we're the ones winning. We're the ones kicking the Americans' asses here, and this will be a dark day for them. While planes are flying overhead, bombs are dropping nearby. And then he disappeared. The agency also claimed that Russia gained $5 billion to orchestrate this agreement. Iran's state TV, which is under the supervision of the supreme leader. Wouldn't that be great to have a supreme leader? And no, it's not God, in case you think the supreme leader is really supreme. No, the supreme leader is Ali Khamenei, which is like another version of the Ayatollah Khomeini. They just basically pronounce it different ways every few years, and they have different people. Now, I'd last 5 minutes in that place. You know that. Anyway, Iran's state TV, under the supervision of the supreme leader, also attributed the fall of Baghdad to a secret deal between coalition forces and the deposed Iraqi president. It aired the fall of Baghdad without showing scenes of Iraqis dancing in the streets. Interesting. So where is Saddam Hussein? Has he been ferreted off to another country somewhere? It's possible. The truth will get out at some point. Unreal. Our phone number, by the way, 631-632-WUSB. We'd like to hear what you have to say about all this. Certainly are interesting times. Certainly a lot of weirdness going on and a lot of uncertainty about the future. And throughout it all, as we said, no evidence of any weapons of mass destruction. See how quickly we change the subject, talk about something else. And this coming from the Washington Post, now apparently is the time for all good radio and TV stations to come to the aid of their country's war. I guess we're not a good radio station, are we? Ah, well. That is the message being pushed by broadcast news consultants. Well, that must be why we don't have a broadcast news consultant. If we had one of those, we'd be doing the right thing instead of spouting off and saying all this gibberish that nobody around here agrees with. Of course not. These broadcast news consultants have been advising news and talk stations across the nation to wave the flag and downplay protest against the war. And, you know, as I look around, I'm looking in three different rooms right now, four if you count the hallway. I don't see a single flag. Not one. Not one flag. How shameful is that? I know, I'm lapsing back to April 1st, I know. It's so easy, though. It's so easy to stay like that. Okay. Get the following production pieces in the studio now. This is according to the war manual issued by Cleveland-based consultant. And they sent this to their clients. Get the following production pieces in the studio now. Patriotic music that makes you cry, salute, get cold chills, go for the emotion. And the name of that consultant, by the way, is McVeigh Media. Air the national anthem at a specified time each day, as long as the USA is at war. Have they been doing that? They actually been playing the national anthem on like Fox News and those other stations? Wow. We've got the national anthem here, I know. It's got dirty lyrics, but we've got it. It's around here. Anyway, the company, which describes itself as the largest radio consultant in the world, also has been counseling talk show stations to make sure your hosts aren't over the top. Polarizing discussions are shaky ground. This is not the time to take cheap shots to get reaction. not when our young men and women are in harm's way. The influential television news consulting firm Frank N. McGid Associates recently put it in even starker terms. Covering war protests may be harmful to a station's bottom line. So that's why you don't see coverage of anti-war protests. That's why you don't see differing views expressed outside, you know, normal parameters. Everybody agrees we have to go in there and you know, bomb countries. The question is, what do we do after we go in there and bomb countries? You know, that's a debate. That's what they consider to be a debate. They will never bring up the really opposing views. For that, you have to turn to stations like us or Pacific Coast stations or all kinds of other things. All right, let's take a phone call. 631-632-WUSB. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi. I'm calling about the statement from the pro-war rally where the guy was saying they should melt down Saddam's statue and put it in the World Trade Center.
Well, that guy was our governor.
Oh, that was the governor of Pataki. Okay, well, I'm calling from Houston, actually, so I'm not too familiar with the
politics.
Well,
then you have experience with crazy governors.
Yeah. But anyway, I was just going to say it's an absurd idea because the statues are made out of bronze, and bronze is a very soft metal and can't support any weight.
Oh, that's great. I didn't even think about that. Of course, scientifically, he's wrong, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Obviously, he doesn't know anything about metallurgy.
You know, I imagine he was just saying it to, like, you know, tug at our heartstrings, but...
I suppose.
He's tugging for the wrong reasons. I mean, you know, have you heard any evidence linking Saddam Hussein to Osama bin Laden or any of these people?
No, I haven't seen a thing. So, I mean, yeah, I've been sitting here waiting for some sort of real evidence, and it's like you said earlier, it's just, you know, cans of chemicals that turned out to be bug spray. So.
Yeah, and, you know, are they allowed to have bug spray even?
I don't know. I'm sure they have lots of bugs. I remember talking to some people who were involved in the first Gulf War who were soldiers over there and saying how atrocious the bugs were. There's just flies there all, you know, everywhere pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah,
I imagine they would need lots of insecticide.
And you know, I feel for the people that are over there too. I mean, they're, you know, they're soldiers. They're following their orders, things like that. And I think, you know, I get the impression that they're trying to cause as little civilian damage as possible.
Yeah,
I get that distinct impression, and I credit a lot of that to public reaction and public condemnation of military action in the first place. But in any military action, you are going to have all kinds of horrible things happening, such as gunning down an entire family when they didn't understand the word stop when they were driving their car.
Yeah.
Things like that are going to happen a lot, and it not only, you know, affects the people that you hurt or kill, but it will destroy you for life, too, if you're the person behind something like that.
Well, I had a friend of mine a couple of days ago who was saying, you know, he had a big quandary about this because he wants to support the troops, but... he really, you know, doesn't really go along with what the government's doing. I said, you know, it's okay. You can support the troops, but you don't have to support the government.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I just think everybody should sort of take that to heart. So those guys over there are just doing their job, and it's a hard job to do. So.
Yeah, that's true. It's also a hard job for us to, you know, be here at home and say what we really feel without being silenced.
Yeah.
So are there outlets in Houston where you can do that?
Well, we have a really good radio station down here, KPFT.
KPFT, a Pacifica station, yes.
You actually.
Yeah.
And it's a Pacifica station, so there's definitely an outlet for alternative voices down here.
That's great. Yeah, that's one of the five cities that has a Pacifica station, and I think until recently it was pretty much playing music most of the time, but I think they've improved.
Yeah, they've improved it a lot lately.
Great. Well, that's the kind of place you have to support and see that it stays put.
Yep.
Hopefully, we can get others in other parts of the country as well. Listen, thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
631-632-WUSB is our phone number. And for those of you overseas who might not have letters on your phones, well, obviously country code 1, 631-632-9872. That's our phone number. And there's other things going on in the world as well as we move into other subjects, which I want to do. I do want to move into other things. Let's take this call, and then we'll see what else is out there. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello? Okay. You can't talk like that. Either you need to get a better phone or a brain upgrade or something. Okay. How about this? Today was the worst day in SARS history, or the best day in SARS history, if depending on your perspective. Hong Kong says the mystery SARS virus has killed 9 more people in the territory, the largest one-day jump since the crisis began unfolding last month. You know, everyone's got their SARS jokes out there. Everyone has sniffles, you know? Oh, I got SARS. Yeah, that's funny. Just got back from Hong Kong. I can't shake this cold. Oh, boy. Tuesday's toll brings the number of deaths from severe acute respiratory syndrome in Hong Kong alone to 56. And there are also 42 new SARS cases, meaning 1,232 have been hit by SARS, with 243 patients discharged. Supporting earlier claims, SARS is striking young and apparently healthy people. 4 of the deaths reported in this former British colony were people in their 30s or 40s who had no prior history of chronic disease. And while SARS has killed at least 150 people worldwide out of more than 3,000 infected, most of the cases have been in China, Hong Kong, and Southeast Asia. The disease is thought to have originated in South China. Mainland China has reported 64 deaths, followed by 56 in Hong Kong, 13 in Canada, 12 in Singapore, 5 in Vietnam, 2 in Thailand, and 1 in Malaysia. One thing they don't tell you, though, or they say it occasionally, but you have to sort of dig for it, is that 95% of the people who get SARS recover. That's an important thing to stop panic from spreading. I don't see people walking around with masks yet, but I expect to see that any day now. So hopefully they'll figure that out. You know, if we poured money into, researching things like this, we'd find answers faster. But, you got priorities. You got priorities here. Okay. What else is going on? Oh, you hear about this story from New York, actually. A bouncer at a trendy Manhattan nightclub was stabbed to death after he tried to enforce New York's tough new anti-smoking law, officials said yesterday. Police said the bouncer was stabbed in the early hours of Sunday morning in the Guernica Club on the Lower East Side, that's right on Avenue B, after asking one of two brothers in the club to put out a cigarette, presumably the one who was smoking. After an argument with the men, the bouncer tried to eject them and was stabbed in the stomach with an unknown sharp object. The bouncer, 6'6", Dana Shazam Blake, 32 years old, died of his injuries. The two brothers, Jonathan Chan and Ching Chan, of Manhattan's Chinatown, face charges of assault, criminal possession of a weapon, and resisting arrest. From what I read today, though, those charges were dropped. Those charges were dropped because they don't have enough evidence. It's pretty unbelievable. Nobody's talking. But the thing that really upsets me about this is that rather than blaming violent lunatics for somebody being killed, and rather than blaming people not speaking up and saying who's responsible for this in the first place, leading to nobody being prosecuted, who do you think they're blaming? They're blaming the law that bans cigarette smoking inside establishments. Now, there's a lot of controversy about this in New York. I know they've been doing this in California for a while. And there's not much I agree with in California. And I'm not thrilled about, being told you can smoke or not smoke, but let's face it. People who smoke don't have any regard for the people around them. I know this from firsthand experience. I've had many friends who have been smokers, some who still are, not very many. But many have been in the past. And their attitude back then was just completely different than what it is now. They could not care less about the people around them. Now, if I wanted to go to a bar in New York City, and I didn't want to have smoke in my face, what do you think the comments of the people in that bar would be if those concerns had been made known? Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll put my cigarette out. I can smoke any time, any place. After all, it doesn't matter to me. No, I don't think so. I think they would have said some things that I probably can't say on the radio. And you can see the reaction that some people have when they're told not to smoke. They become violent. You know? Now, maybe that's the problem. You know, maybe the problem is the fact that you have people addicted to this substance, and they insist that they will indulge in it no matter what the people around them feel. And yeah, all the libertarians are running around saying, oh my God, it's a law. The government is telling us what to do. You know what? This law is a result of people complaining. It's a result of people dying. It's a result of general health care concerns. And I don't even want to hear speculation that it's a flawed study, that secondhand smoke does not cause death or even health problems. Of course it does. Just breathe it in. I mean, you can tell when you're breathing something good, when you're breathing something bad. And you know what? Even if it doesn't cause a single death, the fact that it's offensive, the fact that it makes it difficult to breathe, the fact that it makes you sick, you know, that should be enough right there. I mean, nobody ever got killed from, somebody playing loud music on a blaster. I mean, maybe somebody has gotten killed somehow by that, but, you know, not directly. Secondhand music never killed anyone. But still, you're not allowed to go into a restaurant and blare your music really loud because it's offensive to the people around you. It's simple. Now, you don't go around with a pole asking, well, can I bring my blaster into this place and crank it as loud as I can? Maybe there are people here who want that. You know, it's common sense. It's common sense. I don't know if there is a law saying you can't bring a radio into a restaurant and play it loud. There probably is some kind of a law, but not something specifically pointing to that situation. Most people wouldn't do it. It's common sense. Common courtesy. But cigarette smoke, oh no, that goes out the window. Common courtesy, forget it. Listen to this from the New York Post. Yeah, I don't often quote the New York Post. By the way, our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. Oh, I have a trick. For those of you who are upset when you call and your long-distance company times out and won't let us, talk to you because if the phone rings for longer than, say, 3 minutes, most long-distance companies will cut you off and say, we're not making any money. Why should we continue to have you ring the phone? So if you'd like to be connected, yeah, you'll have to pay whatever your rate is, which is what, 5 cents a minute? Big deal. You can do something else to get to us. You can call this number, 631-632-6601, and I'll tell you what happens. I'll show you what happens, in fact. I don't have to dial all the digits because I'm here on campus. You'll hear this cheerful lady.
Hello, this is the phone mail system. Please dial the extension you would like to leave a message for and then push pound, or enter the last name followed by first name until recognized. To transfer out of phone mail, push 0.
That's what we want. Transfer out of phone mail, push 0.
To transfer to an extension, dial that extension number and then push pound. To enter a name, push star.
Then you dial the 5-digit extension, which is 2-W-U-S-B. And then pound.
You dialed 29872. If this is correct, push enter or pound. If this is not correct, push stop or star.
We're going to push enter or pound. And look, my phone is ringing now. I will not get hung up on because I'm already connected. I'm already paying for this call. So for those of you who haven't been calling because you get disconnected and you don't mind paying whatever it costs per minute, that's the way to do it. I'm not going to repeat all that, so you have to listen to the archives. Okay, New York Post. The headline, Sig Ban Killed Him. Yeah, it wasn't the crazy people that mobbed this guy and stabbed him. No, they didn't kill him. The cigarette ban is what killed him. The absurdity of that statement is just, it's just unbelievable. They go into details, basically the first paragraph. A bouncer was stabbed to death yesterday in a melee at an East Village nightclub after he asked a patron to put out a cigarette, and his relatives blamed the city's tough new no-smoking law. I'm very angry. My brother is a victim of this stupid Bloomberg law, said Anthony Blake. I can't condemn the relatives for speaking out because they're in a state of, they're dealing with a real tragedy here. I just think it's shameful for the New York Post to be using their statements to push their particular point of view about something which really has nothing to do with the fact that somebody was murdered. Anyway, it all started over a cigarette. It's so ironic, something that's supposed to save lives has already taken a life. said one of the patrons. And Bloomberg spokesman Ed Schuyler said the mayor was pleased. You know, just the fact that they would put a sentence like that in the story. This is the last paragraph of the story, in fact. I didn't read 90% of it. The fact that they would say that the mayor was pleased is kind of like it's setting up your mind that this guy doesn't give a crap about what happened to the person. You know, he's not distressed over the fact somebody was murdered. He's pleased about something else. It's just unbelievable that how they set up this story like a bowling pin to get the predictable result. Anyway, Bloomberg spokesman Ed Schuyler said the mayor was pleased the police had quickly arrested the suspects, and his thoughts are with the family of the victim. Yeah, you know, I'd like to know, do people have strong feelings about this, you know, one way or another? Do you have a smoking ban in your town? Would a smoking ban be good for places that you go to? To be honest, I don't see the problem. The only problem I see is the fact that it has to come in the way of a law. But we've been so trained to not have any common sense, you know, that we need a law telling us to put on our seatbelts. Otherwise, you know, we're just going to ride around and get killed all the time. I think that's the real thing that has to be addressed, is responsibility of the individual. But as far as not being allowed to smoke in a restaurant or a bar or something like that, it makes me want to go to restaurants and bars a whole lot more, I'll say that. And the people who do smoke in these places, they just walk to the door. They walk to the door and they stand outside and smoke a cigarette and come back in. You know, they get exercise, they get some air, and they get to talk to the people who are out there. I just don't see it as a big deal. Certainly not something worth killing someone over, and I think if people are becoming all violent, that's really the problem, not the cigarettes. Not the cigarette banning. Just something else that's buried within. No calls. Wow, I'm glad we're not asking for money. All those people who called in and pledged. Come on, give us a call now. 631-632-WUSB. Those of you who can't get on off the hook, I hear lots of complaints. This is where you can actually spout forth and say what's on your mind. Or you can just listen to me for the next 14 minutes. Whatever you want. All right, we have one call. We have five lines. 631-632-WUSB. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
Where are you calling from?
Lake Grove.
Lake Grove?
Yeah.
Great. Right down the road.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Can I digress?
Sure. Digress all you want.
I took an old Freedom phone, like charged it up and drove around with it. I was like...
Don't you mean a French phone?
What?
Don't you mean a French phone?
A Freedom phone. Oh, right. A French phone. A Southwestern Bell French phone.
Yeah. I'm doing the opposite. I'm renaming everything that has Freedom in it to French.
I will do the same.
Thank you.
Good idea. And H2K2 they were talking about. You guys are talking about that. And I didn't get anything. And it just a lot of static and everything. I was wondering, what did I do wrong? I want to get...
This is a cordless phone, right?
Yeah, with the retractable antenna.
And you were trying to listen to other conversations. Well... No, I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, is there something that, you know, you have to go to, like, a high point or something like that?
It really depends on your neighborhood. I mean, I don't have one of those phones myself. I've never actually used one.
Yeah.
But from my understanding, if you go to a densely populated area, you're likely to find somebody else using similar frequencies. You know how many possible frequencies there are on that phone? I mean, have you played around with it?
I don't really think there's... I don't think it has that.
Uh-huh.
It's really old. I mean, it's gigantic, and it's, you know, it weighs about... The handset alone weighs like 5 pounds.
Yeah. Well, the fact that it's really old, it's quite possible that people have migrated onto, you know, more sophisticated phones, different frequencies, you know, that kind of thing. One thing, though, you can still get a lot of, if you can find a scanner that isn't blocked from 800 megahertz, you can still listen to analog cellular.
Oh, really?
I find that incredible. But with all the people that are using Sprint these days, Sprint PCS, they have those dual mode phones that basically allow you to go into analog mode when there's no signal. And since, you know, the Sprint signal really sucks, people who go into analog mode are completely unprotected and they're just out there in the clear. You can still listen to
them. I'll have to play some more.
Yeah, it's out. I mean, I was surprised. I thought it would be dead by now, but it's not.
No. I'll go out there again. Do you know if they're worth anything? Are they collectible?
Oh, there's always people that want these things. Sure.
I didn't know whether if I was done with them. I have two. We have a few laying around that have been that are like old, the old style big old phones, and I didn't know if they just throw them away
One way to gauge it is just
take them apart and use them or something.
Go onto eBay, see if somebody else is selling them, see what they're asking
for.
True. That way you know if there's or just put it into Google or something and see if they're in demand.
Yeah.
But at worst, go to a ham show or electronics convention and just,
I don't like to throw away anyway. I'm like a reuse, recycle.
I know what you mean.
I don't know what the other re is.
Yeah, you just got to keep it from piling up over your head.
Yeah.
That's my view.
It's good. I'm good that way.
Yeah.
Another question I have on the volume 19, number 4, 2600.
Uh-huh.
Is that your picture?
Oh, no. You're talking about the current issue that's out with the mysterious face on the building.
Face on the building?
That actually, I guess I'll reveal it here since so many people have gotten it anyway.
Oh, great.
A lot of people knew it right away, which I was very surprised by because I don't think I would have been one of them.
It's not it's Emmanuel Goldstein from the movie, is it?
No, but you're very close. You're very close. It's Big Brother from the movie.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So I suggest that everybody, in fact, after this show, in 10 minutes, run out to, if your video store is cool enough to have this, run out and get a copy of 1984, the one that came out in 1984, Richard Burton's last film.
Sure.
It's a great production. Don't expect to do a whole lot of cheering throughout it, though. It's pretty depressing.
I know. I have seen it. The thing where they put the rat cage on the guy's head.
Well, don't give away the ending. But it's a great film. It's filmed in England at the exact time that George Orwell prophesied or just simply made his story about. And that particular scene. It's not really a scene from the film. The building is actually a building in Paris that the Chaos Computer Club was able to take over last year, put lights in all the windows, and basically if you were to mail them, a picture on the Internet, they were able to display it on the side of that building. It was kind of like the United Nations. Imagine every window there being a light that you could shade in different
colors. Right. That's not retouched then.
No, we captured the image from the film of Big Brother on the telescreen, and we sent it to them. And we had them take a picture of it for us. In fact, there's an edition of Off the Hook last year where we were talking about just this, and they even mentioned Big Brother on it, which kind of spilled the beans.
I thought that was in Amsterdam.
There was one a couple of years ago that was in Berlin.
Oh, okay.
And then Paris was last year. And I think since the Chaos Communications Congress is now going to be taking place in within a stone's throw of the first building, in fact, right underneath the first building, they might be using that one again in
that's
December.
That's great. I love it.
Yeah. All right, we got some more calls, so I'm going to go to those.
They're always fun.
All right, thanks.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, sorry. 631-632 WUSB. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Eric.
Yeah, who's this?
Hey, this is Bob, man.
Hey,
Bob. Long-time brain damage listener.
Oh, my God. Then you survived, huh?
I was wondering if I could give some trivia here.
Trivia is always welcome.
I was probably the only person to drive my car over the bridge at Stony Brook. It was 1975 Datsun B210 driven across there with a friend of mine in 1983 or 84.
Well, actually, I'm wondering if I did it myself. Yeah, I remember one of my jobs here on campus was to deliver the student newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And I think on my first day, it was such a long time ago, I can't remember if I was thinking about doing it or if I actually did it. I was at least considering pulling my car over to the Union. That way, I don't think I did it. I think I would have been too scared. The way that thing was built, I don't think it would have supported a car. But you actually did it.
Well, yeah. What I did is back then the campus was not as restricted as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
There were barricades here and there and stuff. But what I did is I backed it up. So and I reached the Union Building. Then I drove it forward back towards the Fine Arts Center and the library. And just as I was making my way past the library. Going towards administration and trying to get out on the regular road, one of the campus security guards pulled me over and asked me what I was doing. I just made up a story like I was looking for a professor or whatever, and he was cool and just nice and just said, okay, just watch me go, and that was it.
Wow.
But he didn't actually see me on top of the bridge, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, his attitude might have been a little different if he had seen that.
Yeah, that might have been a little bit of a problem. I was just curious. I wanted to do it because it was just like, a little bit younger, so you just do something crazy.
Uh-huh. I don't know why they tore down the bridge. I mean, it was such a symbol. For those who don't know, the campus here at Stony Brook had this bridge that connected. It was supposed to connect the Student Union Building to the library.
Right.
But the Chowderheads, they built the library. They literally did. They built the library backwards. You can see the other end of the bridge on the other side of the library. And it just... it didn't make any sense. The bridge wasn't going to meet anywhere on this side of the library. So for years, it just stopped in the middle, and it was this symbol of state incompetence, and it was called the Bridge to Nowhere.
Yeah.
Eventually, they built the Fine Arts Center. They made the bridge make a left turn, and then it went there. And then last year, they just tore the whole thing down.
They should have kept it because you could just walk up there and look out, and you could stand underneath it near the Union and just hang out. And it's just unique.
Yeah, and, you know, the concrete pieces that occasionally fell down and hit people are always a conversation piece, too. But apart from that, it was a marker. You know, you told people, you know, go past the bridge or meet me at the bridge or things like that. You know, and now what do you say? You say, you know, meet me where the bridge used to be. Doesn't work.
I don't know. I'm disappointed in the way some of the campus things have gone with the construction. It seems like they're, you know, just building too many of the wrong things.
Oh, don't get me started. that needs a whole show. What's wrong with the campus? But I got to tell you, you know, it's unbelievable that I mean, apathy was always a problem when I went here, but it seems to be a curriculum now. You know, it seems to be something that's mandated. And I hope to see, you know, people waking up and doing all kinds of active things. You know, I don't care what they're espousing. Just espouse something, for God's sake.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for your call. Good to hear your voice.
Okay, see
right.
you later.
Take care. And let's see if we have time for one more. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, where have I reached?
You've reached Off the Wall at WUSB Stony Brook.
Oh, thank you, sorry. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, and with that, I think that leaves nothing more to be said. Should I take one more call? I have like 1 minute left. All right. What if it's the same guy? Maybe he called back. Yes.
Yes. Can we still talk about smoking?
Okay, you're calling for the show. Yes, go ahead. Talk about smoking.
Calling from the show. I love your show.
Thank you.
I want everybody out there who thinks this smoking thing is a bad thing to know that I'm going to go out more often and I'm going to stay longer and spend more money because right now the smoking just drives me out.
Uh-huh.
So that's my 2 cents.
Yeah, you know, it bothers, it stings my eyes, it makes me cough, and, you know, even if it's proven that it doesn't cause people to die, you know, it's still, that in itself should be enough for people to say, hey, my actions are bothering someone else, you know, and I should stop, or I should just do it someplace else.
Yep, so every time one of these restaurant owners complains that this is going to destroy their business,
mm-hmm.
call them up and tell them, I will be there the day that this goes into effect because I appreciate the non-smoking.
Yeah, that makes sense. If you're in a bar, buy an extra drink because, maybe that's not a good thing to espouse. You know what I'm saying? Just you know.
Of course it is. You just have to have a driver.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, spend a little more as a sign of thanks and let the people know that you're there now because, you know, there's no smoke in the area. And they might feel a little better because I know a lot of merchants aren't feeling good about this. And one thing that I have to say is very unfair, they made a lot of these merchants build a non-smoking section.
That is really bad, yeah.
And now they're screwed because they built this non-smoking section, and now it's no good anymore. You know? So, yeah, they should get compensated for that, no question there. No question. But the whole idea as a rule, I think, is great.
Yep, me too.
Thanks for your call.
Good night.
And we are out of time. As always, the calls come at the end of the show. I don't know why that is. For those of you calling now, okay, write it down on your hands, you know, engrave it in your skin, that the show begins at 6 o'clock on Tuesdays, runs until 7, that's Eastern time, and we take phone calls throughout the entire hour, so hopefully we'll talk to you then. And we'll be on again tomorrow night on Off the Hook on the other station, WBAI 99.5, also on the website www.2600.com, on shortwave radio, 7415 kilohertz. Anywhere else you can think of. Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. See you next week.
Written today is a power. Ideas, sentiment, imagination.
fire culture.